done. Yeah, I feel like Shah Rukh Khan. Yeah, I feel like Shah Rukh Khan. 20,000 fans on my lawn. I can never do no wrong. Yeah, world in my palms. Knew I was the greatest all along. Yeah, I feel like Shah Rukh Khan. Yeah, I feel like Shah Rukh Khan. 20,000 fans on my lawn. I can never do no wrong. Running off from Bombay to Milan. See me when you turn your TV on. Yeah, I feel like Shah Rukh Khan.
Episode 8, and the boys are back in business.
Back at it again.
As you can see, we're keeping track with the scheduling of releases and being good boys like you
like
know
always.
We're supposed to. But welcome back to another episode of the Jolo Mr. Madi. I am the Madi, Ivan, DJ Anzo.
I am the Jola, Ibrahima, Uncle E.
And today, we are coming at you with a first-time international guest. Let me tell you, we are going to travel out of Africa this time, and we are going to...
It's about time.
You know, we're getting our Asian brothers and sisters involved with this one.
We've been. But now I just... We're making it official, innit?
Facts. But... I don't know how you been, bro. How's it been?
You know, we got to do the check-in. You know, yeah. Boys have been good. You know, yeah. Some are living in quarantine.
Yeah.
I did a hike yesterday. And
Mount Sai, right?
It was not easy. Oh, this guy.
Mount Sai?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was 9 miles with 3,000 feet elevation gain. So, boys, local man was in severe pain.
Yeah,
it was tough. That's what I'm saying. You know, like with hikes, there's some hikes that, like, if I know it's going to be a tough hike, I can be like, all right, let me prepare for it. But I thought it was going to be kind of an easy hike. Boys suffered. So it was a tough hike, but you know, it was worth
it. It's been a strange hiking season because, like, you, like, at least have to wear a mask when you're, like, passing people. And it's just like, and that heat, it can do something to you.
Well, good thing was it wasn't hot. When we were nice, hiking like, up, because we're hiking day. Morning, but it was hot. Maybe a dead thing.
I mean, you know, boys were on other things yesterday, so.
Well, how have you been?
You know me, bro, I'm always chilling. I can't complain.
All right.
Alive, we're happy, we're healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Bro, I mean, a lot of people, I'm sure, could say the same thing, so.
Yeah, okay.
You know how it goes.
Sawa.
He says sawa. Hanging out with East Africans too much. But nah, today, man, I don't know. I'm always excited to just talk with people. And today even is just like another blessing that we have a what should we say?
I have a bestie coming to this episode.
A bestie, but not be small bestie, yo.
Yeah.
This bestie get accolades.
A bestie out here, you know?
But... I mean, you should do the honors of introducing.
Yeah, of course. I will, you know. I don't want to sound like, you know, like I said, I told her we're not going to interview her. You know, so, I'll keep it very informal. Very informal.
We have questions, though.
Yeah, we have questions. But, it's an honor, and we're glad. And we kind of told her, you know, low-key, like, yo, you know, we're going to get you on this, like, you know. She be getting mad facts. Yeah. I feel like I've learned most facts in the last, you know, just few months. Since especially now that I'm, you know, I think I'm the bestie title. I'll claim it.
Precisely.
Straight up facts. But so without any further ado, and you know, we'll ask her a question, interview her. But we would like to, introduce to the Jola Meets the Madi, Dr. Shivani Patel.
Dr. Shivani, welcome to the podcast. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey.
Welcome.
Thank you for joining
us. We out here.
Yes, so please, as standard, tell us, you know, where you're from, a little bit about your background, your journey, and just, you know, just what brings you here and how we ended up on this podcast. Real quick.
Yeah, absolutely. So like you said earlier, I'm Shivani. Mm-hmm. I was born in Jersey, but have lived in Florida for a while. I was born in Voorhees, which is kind of right outside Cherry Hill.
Okay.
I don't know Jersey that well.
I don't even know where she's
Wait, so you didn't live there for long, right?
No.
Okay.
No. I was born there. I lived in India for about 4 or 5 years when I was young. moved back over here. We moved around a lot, ended up in Florida for about the last 11 years, I would say. Mm. And just recently moved out to Seattle about 2 months ago.
Moved back.
Moved out.
Moved out to Seattle. She's a new Seattleite.
Yeah.
Now, what part of India were you living in when you were living there?
So my parents are actually Gujarati, which is from West India. But my dad, though he was born in West India, his family and him have always lived in Rajasthan, which is a little bit more north. So I was actually out in Jaipur for a good portion of my childhood. The Pink City.
Yeah, yeah. Nice place.
Yeah.
Is that with the Pink River or something like that?
Nah. Mm-mm. Nah.
Maybe I'm tripping.
They have a lot of castles and a lot of just things. It's kind of like a desert-y sort of vibe.
Okay.
There's a lot of castles there. That's kind of what it's known most for. There's a bunch of forts and like Amer Fort is a really popular one people go to out there.
Okay.
Yes, and you know, here's a fun story I like to share, you know, like how I met Shivani, right?
Uh-huh.
So, you know, long story short, I don't want to go too long, but you know how it is in college, right? You know, like college boys, so Kunal, I won't even give the title yet.
That's my baby.
So, you know, one time orientation, we were walking, you know, I just saw this guy and we're walking. I think I wore a United shirt or something. Someone came in like, yo, United sucks. I'm like, get out of here. You know, United's the best team. Who do you support? Arsenal. I'm like, Arsenal? Get the hell out of here.
He's an Arsenal man.
You know, Arsenal guy. Anyway, so Kunal, you know, from college, you know, from orientation, you know, that's when I met Kunal. You know, of course, you know, it's like your boys, your day ones from college, you know, and you go through the whole journey with. And, you know, I think one time eventually, you know, she just showed up or I saw her somewhere, you know. I'm like, yo, Kunal, who's this? She's like, yo, that's my girl. I'm like, yo, girl, what you doing, fam? We're in college. Yeah. But anyway, so he's like, yeah, you know, so I met her first time. At first, I'm like, this guy, Kunal, fam, messing up the crew out here.
when did you guys meet?
We met in high. Well, we've known each other for a long time.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, he had a crush on me for a real long time.
Oh. I would like to hear a story on this one. Yeah.
Ooh, the classic.
Yes.
They were into me first.
Apparently, when I met him, I punched him on the arm.
Uh huh.
And then he fell in love with me.
Wow, Kunal.
That makes sense. I'm not gonna lie. Kunal,
we have questions. I'm gonna have to call you after, fam. You gotta ask.
I'm not gonna lie, because they say if a girl punches you, that she's the one who's into you. So
yeah, nah, for real.
I don't know about all that.
I think so, Ivan. But you know, but just going over the years, and you know, and throughout college, you know, and of course, eventually getting to know her a little bit in college, I'm like, man, Kunal's girlfriend. Even me, and Ade used to be like, man, Kunal's girlfriend, Shivani, she's mad cool, you know. So, you know, I feel like she had the stamp of approval from, you know, the boys
from
in
the
college.
Boys.
You know, in college, she didn't know though. But, you know, I mean, Ade would talk about, like, yeah, Shivani, yeah, she cool, yeah, Kunal, yeah, you know, like, if we're gonna go, you know, I ain't gonna ride, but, you know, let's say if we're going out or something, we wouldn't invite Kunal, because out of respect, and that, you know, he's really introverted anyway. Yeah. But, you know, we didn't drag him along, like, our college parties and stuff,
so
out of respect, you know.
What were you doing in college that was so...
Huh? What do you mean? So, you know, so the day I was watching yesterday TV, right? And they say Hulu does have live sports.
That's very factual.
Hulu does have live sports.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Speaking of live sports, the Raptors just swept the Nets.
Damn.
Luka hit with that game winner over.
Paul George is looking real miserable, but
Clips, man. You guys got to get that together.
George Paul. Moving like George Paul.
NBA playoffs is going real good, man. Like, it's good basketball. It seems like one big AAU camp.
So I love that the NBA is back. But remember when we talked about once it's back, now we wouldn't care anymore about it. So how do you think? Because to be honest, I'm glad it's back. But really, like, I feel like it's low-key distracting me a little bit more on social issues. So I'd like to hear both of you guys' opinions on
that. What do you think?
I agree with that. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, this country runs on money. Mm-hmm. And so when you think about athletics overall, whether it's basketball, football, pretty much anything, the players have power. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we see kind of all these players out here with their with their Black Lives Matter shirts and all of that. Statements, but,
yeah.
You know, and at the end of the day, money kind of runs the country. And so when you have a bunch of athletes doing more symbolic things, I feel like there's a bigger impact that could be made if all the players decided, you know, we're not going to play this season. Because if you think about how many athletes are Black or, you know, and you think about...
70%, I think, of the NBA is Black. The athletes,
oh, wow.
Players, yeah. About low. 70% of the NBA players.
That seems low to me.
So that's basically the whole league, if you think about it.
Yeah.
But I think that if... Had there been some sort of way that the athletes had come together and said, you know, we're not doing this, I think there would have been some real power there.
I think it's important that you touched on this country runs on money, because that's like exactly what I thought about when the NBA first came back was
74.4%, Ivy.
74. Thank you.
Wow. But,
like E was saying on one of our earlier podcasts, he was like, you know, it's if they all banded together and like
said they will not play,
this
is a bigger time,
would have sent a lot stronger message than like coming back. And he had actually kind of called out LeBron for, you know,
like it's all cool posting a photo of you reading an autobiography of Malcolm X book, you know, and you know, but I'm just like, dude, you know, and like I said, I knew I would fall into this, like, I knew I would fall into being happy as hell. The NBA is back and so consumed so that I can argue with the LeBron fans, tell Ivan how he sucks, you know, in terms of he's not the GOAT. You know, he's great, but he's not just the GOAT. So all of that, you know, I'm so consumed about it. I watch it all the time. And I'm not going to lie, like, you know, and just being honest with myself now, like if I'm scrolling and I see someone post like, you know, how those, a lot of Instagram was so great at sharing really short information on like, you know, sign this petition, learn about this, you know? Or I scroll one more down. Here's a Bleacher Report of Luka Doncic hitting a game winner.
Yeah.
I am on the game winner. Like, you know.
Definitely,
You know, especially like to a lot of us guys or everyone who's sports, into sports, right? You know, because the way we love sports so much, the fact that it's back, we would, you know, we would inherently, without even trying, like, I would like to focus more on, you know, still what's going on, the movement, what's still, you know, we have COVID pandemic and all that. But sports is giving me now, NBA being back, it's an outlet for me. Football being back, it's an outlet. And it's now taking away that time I would have spent, you know, learning more, educating myself more, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm just watching highlights and watching games.
Yeah, no, I could say the same thing, you know. I really would have hoped that it wouldn't have turned out just like we thought it would.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems like now there's less time and less effort dedicated to causes, right? Because when there were no sports, no basically cash generating like national activities going on, that was all that we talked about and that was all that was in the limelight, right? And so they were actually like, you know, companies being held accountable.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You know, the whole of like just corporate America was being held accountable. The government was being held accountable. People were, you know, calling their local politicians and whatnot. And now it's like, oh, well, you know, it's kind of back to normal-ish. You know, there's still people out there who are, like, very about the cause, but you don't see the same protests, like, happening no more. At least not, they're not as magnified, you know.
I think it's interesting you brought up LeBron reading a book, because I was listening to this guy who was really involved with local politics in Louisiana. His name is Gary Chambers Jr., and actually, he has a video that explained why protests work.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with it, but basically, the reason it's really important for people to be out in the streets, especially on the scale that they were because every day that people are out on the streets, you're draining government resources. Mm. You're draining local, state, national resources and money. And so the government wants to do whatever it can to make sure that people aren't doing that because it's literally draining their resources.
Agreed.
I didn't even think about it from that.
Yeah, I had no idea until I like listened to him talk about it.
I guess definitely did. Policemen out there in like riot gear and like,
yeah,
like,
it's a lot. Think of it, like when we did the silent march, Shivani. Like, think of how many people. What was it? 60,000 people.
Yeah.
Over 1 mile stretch. 60,000 people take out of a whole highway, and we're just marching. And it was cops. You can just tell it was like helicopters were, you know, flying over. Like I said, huge amount of resources, right? And I just felt like at that moment where we were, with the whole, not even the country, the whole world where we were, you know, and, you know, we all know that that cannot be sustained at that level. But, you know, I look at it in terms of means that take it out. You know, of course, you have election talk coming up, but sports is a huge part of it that helps, you know. I won't say it, you know, like, you know, reduces the fire, but, you know, it's a distraction from
that. It definitely is, man.
And we have to acknowledge it. And this was my worry with, you know, Prem's football being back, NBA. A little part of me said, man, I wish none of these leagues came back. Of course, money always wins. Money, economy. But a little part of me told these wouldn't come back. And I look at it, I'm like, well, you know, of course, it shouldn't matter that just because the NBA has 74.4% black players, they should be the one league that doesn't come back, you know. But just the way that they have been deemed as a progressive league, the way the players have came out to take that stance for social justice, I would have just thought that they would have taken this as their opportunity to make that grand statement by saying, no, we will not go back to playing. Because
you see, that's why I respect the player. Well, Kyrie's always been my favorite basketball player, just based off talent. But that's, I kind of like really respect what he did, you know, because he's like, you know what, I'm going to opt out of this the rest of this season, you know, and he's trying to recruit other players. Like, look, guys, like, there's a bigger cause here, you know, we're already millionaires, most of us, right? As long as you're not being dumb with your money, you're probably set for the rest of your life, right? And he's looking at it like, look, there's something bigger than me that needs attention right now. And he's just fully invested in himself in that, you know. And that's what I had hoped, you know, majority of the players would have done. But, I mean, you can't really speak to someone's personal situation. You know, they have all sorts of reasons for maybe why they didn't opt out. But, yeah, man, like, just the message on the back of the jersey doesn't really, you know,
it's not,
it like, doesn't hold, you know, any
for me for I don't me. Think it holds as much value.
I appreciate the effort, but you know, there's something bigger that needs to be done at the end of the day, you know.
Yeah.
So it's unfortunate that you know, there's like that situation happening overall, but I guess sports are back for those who really, really care about it.
True.
But hey, you know, it is what it is.
Now I just have, you know, want to ask Shivani, being a healthcare professional, in terms of the pandemic, what's going on, right? Especially for us minorities, you being a minority in healthcare profession, minority healthcare professional, young minority healthcare professional, right? What have been the biggest lessons you've learned from when the pandemic started, in addition to the, you know, highlight of, you know, the racial injustices and the systematic racism that has been going on for years? You know, it was an awakening for a lot of us, right? So for you, what were your big takeaways?
Absolutely. So one thing I want to clarify before I kind of dive into this a little bit is, because I'm Indian and a woman of color, I am a minority, but actually in the medical profession, especially in the physician's world, I'm actually an overrepresented minority.
Oh, wow. Yes.
And is that globally or?
Thinking about it.
Because, globally or in the United States?
In the United States. Okay. I don't know about globally.
I think so. Yeah, I actually never thought. Yeah. Yeah. So you are not technically a minority in your profession.
I wouldn't say I'm underrepresented.
Okay.
So as a whole, yes, I'm a minority.
Good point. Right.
But when we talk about minorities in medicine, I would not consider myself to be underrepresented.
Good. Yeah. Okay. Thanks for telling us that. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I only say that because you know, healthcare disparities has kind of been this passion of mine since college. And we actually have a really desperate need for more Black physicians. Right now, the last numbers I saw were only 6% of American physicians are Black.
Only 6%.
6%. And so when you're taking care of a population where the Black population is much higher, it's really problematic that you have such an underrepresentation. And, you know, you just think about how comfortable you feel when you walk into a doctor's office and you see someone who kind of looks like you, can explain something to you.
Yeah.
I see this with my parents. Like, they prefer to go to Indian doctors. And it just, you know, and luckily for them, we're technically overrepresented. So they don't have a lot of issues finding somebody like that. There's been recent, there was this recent report on CNN that discussed how Black babies who were born have a higher mortality rate when birthed by white doctors.
Wow.
Than Black doctors, or?
I don't know if it was the comparison with, like, who the physician was.
More so just their white counterparts?
Exactly.
Wow.
Interesting.
The mortality rate for, even the maternal mortality rate, there's a huge disparity in that as well. But I diverge because, well, technically I don't diverge because the disparity exists in COVID too.
Exactly.
Very, very much so.
It's extremely unfortunate because it is a systemic issue, and it is, you know, we talk about what's called the social determinants of health.
Exactly.
And it's basically how your age, your gender, your race, your where you live, your socioeconomic status, your neighborhoods, and the food that's available to you in certain neighborhoods, and, you know,
I'm showing Ivan. She had sent me an infographic on this, the socioeconomic factors and various other factors for health.
And so what this, basically what it is that there's so many different factors that play into health, and all of them are important in determining your health status and then, you know, sort of what happens to you. COVID is kind of an exacerbation of all of these social issues we've seen for so long. The unemployment rate is higher. You already have people living from paycheck to paycheck. In this country, you know, the sad reality is that most of those people are minorities. And when I say minorities, I mean specifically the Black and Hispanic populations. And it's just kind of one thing on the other, you know, like we said earlier, money runs this country. And that plays into people's lives too, you know, like you don't need money to be happy, but you need money to have a baseline level of comfort and security. I like to think about it in terms of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I don't know if y'all remember this.
For sure, yeah.
But the most basic needs are just those you need to sustain your life, right? You need food, you need water, you need a safe place to live. And when you don't have that, and then you have a pandemic on top of it, there's really, you know, you're, if you're living paycheck to paycheck, you're not having more room for that personal growth, the things that fulfill you, that sort of self-fulfilling journey that people like to have. You don't really have that. You're not worried about those things. You're worried about surviving. And so that's kind of been the case with COVID, I feel like.
And it always kind of amazes me how people don't realize that there's really two whole separate worlds that are like just ways a world apart in terms of if you go into places in Black America versus white America, right? So when I see, you know, a bunch of little high school kids running around, you know, no masks on, acting like everything is all good and gravy, you know, it kind of like takes me back because I'm like, yo, like these kids have probably never tasted a day of like another person's reality, you know? And it really like puts me in a place where I'm just pensive, you know, about we don't have like a Kirkland Washington in Black America, right?
Well, I mean, exactly what you're saying, and like even Shivani earlier, she had like what she was talking about with the various factors. Like it really brought me to light, you know, in terms of understanding the various way why, you know, I wouldn't care, black people are oppressed in this country, and the socioeconomic factors and why it's more prevalent, obesity, well, guys, I wrote one paper on obesity. Nah, I feel like I'm an
he's
expert.
A brand new man.
I'm like an expert these days, but I was gonna
Dr.
say
B Dr. is also e, in the house.
COVID, guys, if you didn't know, I wrote a whole paper on like obesity, but anyway, I digress. But I was gonna say, so Shivani had sent me various, you know, information, and like, you know, facts about, especially in terms of, you know, black people, Hispanic people, why COVID is more prevalent, why mortality rates are higher, and what she mentioned about the various factors. And it really shows that, like, to me, it was really highlighting if people were wondering, like, oh, there's no racism in this country, or there's no such thing as, you know, systematic racism, or why, you know, but COVID was kind of ways for us that allowed us to highlight it, to see. When you saw, you know, black people, you know, are dying more than, you know, any other mm-hmm. race from COVID. So I guess the question I have for Shivani is, if you can put a historical context of before COVID, what if you know, or if you want to share any other indicators that were showing that, you know, black people being, you know, suppressed to have access to healthcare made them prone to, you know, various other diseases, or were being used as being tested. The other diseases were tested on black people. So could you kind of tell us more on that?
Oh, man.
You gave her like 10 questions.
Yeah. Well, it's the reason I said, oh, man, is because it's a very complex answer to that question. So if you look at sort of all the different diseases that exist mm-hmm. and you look at the racial disparity in those diseases, not every single one, but there are so many chronic conditions where there is such a large disparity in who is more affected and who is, you know, dying more from these diseases. The history of medicine is filled with white supremacy. You know, one of the biggest examples is sort of the history of gynecology. Marion Sims is sort of considered the father of gynecology. And he basically used to test surgical techniques on his slave women without anesthesia.
Wow.
And the reason that I think that this example kind of really just is, I think, even more like kind of an enhanced thinking for me is because I'm pursuing anesthesia. And one of the biggest things we do for people is to help them not feel pain when we're doing these extremely painful procedures.
Right.
And so if you think about, you know, the guy who is coined as the father of gynecology, who was testing these techniques on black women, it's kind of disturbing, actually, right?
Sick.
It's extremely disturbing because it's kind of this, it was kind of this, I guess, nidus for like what has kind of happened since then. Earlier, I mentioned mortality rates being higher, maternal mortality rates being higher, and infant mortality rates being higher in black children or black babies. But it kind of has pervaded through sort of all of medicine. So even now, you know, unfortunately, like, because the institution of medicine has historically been sort of run by old white men, there's not a level of cultural competency that you would want for such a diverse population. Mm. And that's changing. I think it's slowly changing, but it's not quite there yet. And so basically you have a group of people that are unequally, they're unequally already existing in terms of their health.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then you have this hospital system and this medical system that continues to further create that disparity or contribute to it. And then you also have physicians who kind of have different levels of training, different backgrounds. And you would hope that in medical school, we are all kind of equalized and learn about all these issues. But one thing that, you know, going through medical school was really interesting to me was just how different you can practice medicine based on each person. So sure, some of the treatments and how you diagnose something and what tests you order and all of that stuff is the same, or there's standards for that. But how you talk to people, how you approach people, how you communicate non-verbally with people, all of these things are still filled with all these unconscious biases or racial biases that people have. And so you have, you know, a medical system that is increasingly getting diverse, but has historically been predominantly white and specifically white men that are taking care of people that are completely different from them. And so I think with COVID specifically, right? So we talked about all these social determinants and then now, like, once you do get sick or you are tested positive, you're entering the hospital system or the medical system, where now you're navigating a whole different set of issues. And, you know, hopefully you encounter people that are very attuned to your cultural background and sort of your lived experience, but it's not the standard and it's not kind of the norm, actually. And so I think that that partially, both of those things together have contributed.
Yeah.
Yo, I haven't had anyone ever so well.
It goes way back, fam.
You articulated that really well.
Paints the picture, you know?
And two, it's like people kind of limit their history to maybe the civil rights movement, you know, where they're like, okay, well, this is a good starting point to think about, you know, modern medicine and things like that. But I think that's so important that you brought up, like, the so-called father of gynecology, because, you know, he's...
I hate that word.
Yeah, it's...
I hate calling him
get
that.
Get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
I mean, that speaks to the American school system and how, you know, information and history is taught, yeah, right?
Absolutely.
Is we're going to ignore everything about this guy but the fact that he, you know, was the father, so-called, of gynecology. Yet they don't, you know, take into account his
and it comes into play, though, you know. I know, of course, if you look at earlier times when, you know, males being deemed they should only do those type of things. But, you know, I always find it now, like, when men are, you know, of course, you can have, like, male gynecologists and stuff, you know. Are most gynecologists male, female, you know, men?
It's increasingly becoming more women.
Yeah, so little things like that. Yeah. Like, it's like, why are, you know, like, I was finding feeling like it's the same thing. I don't want to be political on this issue. Is, you know, like, but male politicians trying to make decisions for women
for
on
women.
What they should do there.
Like that dickhead in Georgia.
Absolutely.
Like,
it just comes off like, what? You know, like, you know, like, why as a man should I be trying to make laws or decisions, research, you know, on for something that for like exactly that women should be doing? Like, it is, I have no place to do that. I have no place if I was a politician to make a law that, oh, well, women shouldn't be allowed to do this, you know. I was like, it just
zero, you know, place. Like, we
it
don't
just
have
baffles
any place.
Me. I'm like, really? And that imagine topic, the opposite, huh? Way. It's, you know, woman was telling us, you know, we can't play football or something. Yeah, like, you know, it's really baffling. So I try to think of it from that standpoint.
Yeah.
And it's really, you know, you get frustrated. So I'm like, man, if I'm frustrated, imagine how, like, women would feel. You know, would feel like,
that's really interesting you say that. I have two things to say to that. So one, I'm a raging feminist.
Oh, yeah.
And you guys, E definitely knows
that. Yeah, for sure.
But, one, the first thing I want to say is, even if just going past like politics and all of that, one thing that's really interesting to me is if you look at the most renowned chefs in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, historically, women have been told that cooking is their department.
Uh-huh.
So why are all of these renowned chefs historically been dudes?
I don't get it.
Hey, look, Chef Ramsay. Chef Ramsay slander.
There was the funniest on Hell's Kitchen. I don't even know. It was one of his shows. He got clowned by a Thai chef when he was trying to make pad Thai. And you remember that?
I haven't seen that.
The Thai chef was like, "What is this?" Because he tried to make some pad Thai that was.
But that's a good point, though.
That's a great point.
Most chefs, renowned chefs in the world, are men. Mm-hmm. You know, I actually don't know who Rachel Ray.
Rachel Ray's. Yeah, I guess.
What was the racist lady's name? The one who.
Oh, the Southern lady. I forget her name.
What's her name? Hey, boy, she has her, have this kiss though. It looked like this slap, fam. The Southern lady. She got kicked off the show.
I forget her name, but I know who you're
talking
about. Yeah,
sorry, guys. Sometimes I'll be testing Shivani with, like, jokes like, what? She can't cook? Nah, fam. And she always be hitting me with some strong clapbacks. So, but yeah, all jokes aside, though, that is a point.
I never thought about it, to be honest. And that's a great point that you bring up.
Yeah. I forgot the second thing I was going
to
say about
but
that.
But to note, though, I'm still thinking, even though, like I said, you mentioned that, being Indian American or if Indian heritage in medicine, you're not a minority. There are not a lot of women, though, in that field, I'm guessing.
And what, the health field?
No, like, studying, like what she's saying, anesthesiology and... Mm-hmm. Are there, is it,
you would know, you say women are,
would you say that, women are represented well in that field or in some fields they're not?
Yeah, that's interesting you say that. So, anesthesia, we joke that we're like the people behind the curtain. We do a lot of
very humble people.
Yeah, very humble people. We do a lot of the cerebral work during surgery, but surgery is actually historically a man's field. And in certain subspecialties of it, like orthopedics, urology, those are all predominantly men. And so there are certain fields where, I think we're overrepresented as women, but there's definitely still fields where I've had friends in medical school and, people I've mentored that talk about how as soon as women I've mentored that talk about how as soon as they say they want to do surgery, everyone basically gives them crap for it.
Just kind of laughs about it.
Yeah, okay. Well, not even laughs, but just like, when are you going to have kids? How are you going to take care of a family? You know how busy you are.
I see.
You know how much you're going to have to work. You're going to have to live at the hospital. How could you?
Yeah.
And I mean, I personally didn't want a surgeon's lifestyle.
Yeah.
They do work really hard and rightfully so. The only way you can really get better at surgery is if you do surgery. More.
Stressful.
But that was really interesting to me because the guys don't get pushback for that, So you have all these brilliant women who have gone through so much of their training, who are now very passionate about surgery and who are getting told that they shouldn't be passionate about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. What field would you say women are more or overly represented?
That's what I'm trying to understand.
Would you say nurses?
I think it would be interesting to be a male nurse.
Yeah.
Or a man who is a nurse. Yeah.
Yeah, to your point. So, because that's probably why I'm really asking this question. It's like when I go to a hospital, most of the time when the receptionist, the nurses, would be woman or, and then usually I'm not like when it comes to meet the doctor, it's a male doctor and usually I'm seeing, it could be, for me, I've encountered more white males or, it could be an Asian man.
And that's usually how it's been represented too.
So like, exactly.
From time, yeah.
That's, that's usually, especially here in America, like that's what I see. It's always nurses, receptionists, always, it's females. And then, once it's time to meet the doctor, here comes, Dr. White or Dr. Chang,
Dr. Smith.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And this is where, I guess. So I'm like, so that's what I'm trying to understand is, is that the case? You know, if so, you know, I know you can't, we can't say or force anybody to get into it, but you know, I just wanted to take note that that's what I see usually, especially here in most hospitals.
Is there a history to that?
Yeah.
Because like even when you watch the movies, right?
Yeah, exactly.
The nurse comes in, usually a white, young,
yeah,
like they deem pretty nurse, right? And then, you know, they do whatever.
It's
and then
that a stereotype.
Yeah. That's, and then the doctor comes in and he's an old white man
with
the, you know, the white coat, and he's like, oh, you know, here comes the doctor, whatever. Is there a history to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, most doctors or most people who are admitted into these medical schools were predominantly white men. And I think that it over time, as actually, it's really interesting because I don't know if you guys watch Grey's Anatomy, but there's...
I love that. I love that. I love that.
I mean, 15
before seasons? I moved out here, I had to watch the whole thing again because I was like, that's about to be me. But there's actually... the only reason I bring it up is because there's a point in the show where the black doctor and the white women or the white surgeon who is a woman... are thinking about back in the day, and it kind of has this flashback to when they were initially starting residency and starting to do all of that. And it was just them, and everyone else was white men.
Yeah.
And so, and this was a black man and a white woman.
I mean, I've seen some episodes. Is that Meredith Grey and... some Parker, right? Dr. Parker? I don't know.
Boy, I don't know what you're talking about.
But it was Meredith's mom.
Meredith's mom.
Yeah, so like the older Dr. Gray.
Okay.
And then their, I don't want to say program director, but the person who like runs the program.
Okay.
Him.
Okay.
Interesting.
But I think that that just like really showcases what it used to be like. So historically, yeah, it was mostly white. Older or mostly white men who are in these like advanced or higher level programs. And as
why the nurse, like why was that the, was it because it was a little lesser of a, you know, task, if you will?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure the history of nursing as much. And this isn't really the case anymore because I'd like to think we're moving towards a world where nurses and doctors sort of work together.
I hope so.
As opposed to just the doctors giving orders that the nurses then do.
Exactly.
But I think historically, like, it was a subservient role, and I'm putting air quotes right now. And so... you know, you have men who are doctors and women who are nurses.
Interesting.
That makes sense.
And I don't know if... yeah, and I don't know if... I don't know if men are discouraged from nursing because it's, you know, seen as a woman's role.
You or something. You know, like...
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like this is kind of the case with, like, women engineers, right? It's kind of...
It's tough. There's not much of them. Yeah, it's tough. I agree.
And you have girls like kind of being taught at a young age, and that, you know, boys are better at math. And so, engineers, it's like all dudes.
Shit, who came up with that? Because there was bare men in engineering classes in school. You know, and that's where you go. Yeah, no, that's a good point to bring.
So I think women have just been oppressed for so long, and it's really such a shame. Yeah, I've had this discussion with Gunal actually, and he's just like, imagine how much further we would be if both were always equal, like they should be.
Yeah.
You know, you have like the NASA story. That was a woman.
Yeah. Catherine, the hidden figures. Catherine Johnson, is that her name? Yeah. And you know, it's proven too, you know, one, not even with nations that are led by a woman. Companies that have women in high
CEOs.
Even in medicine.
Even in medicine too.
Women physicians have better outcomes.
Yes, it is proven that women, see my class too that I took.
Dr. B.
Dr. B.
The class I took said, you know, women doctors actually are shown to be more, I'm summarizing it, more effective than male doctors because, you know, they're
better.
Is it wrong to say they're more emotional? Is that wrong to say?
Yeah, I wouldn't say we're more emotional.
No. Okay, they can. I don't know.
We're better communicators. Here, let me step in over here.
Thank you. I was trying to, you know, that's why I asked. You know.
Because men can be better emotional. Communications,
huh? Yo, let me say this.
Better communicators. That's what I would.
Because we're more empathetic.
That's the word I was looking for. Empathetic.
No. Not emotional.
Not emotional.
Because emotional has been used negatively towards women.
That's why I was, you know, pragmatic to use it. But yeah, empathetic.
I've seen, like, white men freak out at work in a professional establishment, right? And have no reparations for it.
None.
But then a woman will do the same
thing. They'll be like, yes. And there she goes being okay. Yeah,
she's probably here, you know, the time of
month. Yeah, exactly.
Like, shit like that. And I'm like, yo, hold on. Like,
you bring up a great point, Ivy. You know? You bring up a great point. Because just you saying that, I can say I've at least seen or personally witnessed at least 6 of those incidents at work.
Yeah.
Where either one of the women at work, you know, said something that another guy didn't like, or even didn't raise their voice or maybe clap back. Uh-huh. You hear, you know, guy thought, oh, man, must be her time of the month. Oh, man, you know? There she is again, actually being emotional or, you know, overreacting. So we do that, you know, and of course, now I feel guilty because I just kept quiet and just, you know, I should have probably told him, like, hey, that's wrong. You shouldn't do that. But yeah, we do see that thing.
You see, what I saw was this man, I should call him a boy because the way he was acting, he stood up, he's throwing pens everywhere.
Oh,
right?
Heck no.
One almost hit me, so I was like, my friend.
Moving mad.
If that thing touches me.
Moving mad.
You know?
Doctor, real quick.
And then there was another, and he wasn't even held accountable for anything.
Nothing.
You know? The manager was just like, ah, you know, that's just him. And I was like, what? Like, that's not acceptable. And when one of my female coworkers slightly raised her voice about something that was very, very, I think it was a very, like, reasonable cause. She was forced to apologize to everybody.
Wow.
For her action.
Can you imagine?
You know? And so I was like, guys, wait, like, what's... It's... Yeah.
We need us guys to, like, we need to not only educate... I wish there was some awareness incorporated for us to highlight these things.
I think it helps when guys speak up. When those things happen, though.
Facts.
So that's the key. That's what I was saying. Like, I wish I'd say something. I feel like, you know, but I'm saying, like, if... I'm not trying to make it easy on guys. But also, let's say if you start working at a place or progressive or something. Of course, you should generally... It's like that show, What Would You Do? You should generally try and speak up. But if sometimes you could feel like the culture there is so suffocating that you will not be prone to speaking up. But say if I go somewhere and, you know, the first thing when I start is they say, hey, if you see any of this sort of behavior, like, you know, talking down on women, minorities, black people, you know, make sure you speak up. If you're reassured that this is what our culture is about and this is what we're, you know, we want to promote, you probably have more likely to have that sort of
positive. You just got to do better. But to your point about, like, women being better and... Did you say make better decisions as surgeons? Is that what you said?
No, just better communicators.
Better communicators. More.
I also think that women are better collaborators.
Oh, absolutely.
Because...
In what ways?
I think just in whatever field that
you think
in.
They're better or they're the same as guys? They're, you know, everyone...
As far as collaborating goes?
Collaborating in what sense? Work or, you know...
In every school project I've had, right? This is going back to school now.
Actually.
All the women I've worked with, I can't say there was one. Okay, maybe there was a few where they were just like not helping the cause. But majority of the time, it's a female taking the lead, right? And past that, she's the one kind of making sure that there's cohesion going on in the group. I had one group where a man was leading it and he was kind of older than everybody else. And that was just the worst experience because this guy was so controlling. And if anybody had an idea, we're doing it this way because, you know, and I was like, Doug, like, who even put you in charge? This is a group project, right?
Yeah.
I know, right? Who manages this?
I think that translates to the workplace, like, even more so, because I've definitely had people on my team that are men who are just stuck in their own ways. And then it's women who are, they like to collaborate more. And
I think women are better leaders.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
So with that being said,
not that saying that it should be all women leaders. There's supposed to be a balance, in my opinion.
I agree, and that's what feminism is. It's about equality.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yes.
No, for sure. That's what true. I'm saying. Yeah. there should be a balance, but I think that it's grossly
imbalanced in most places. Yeah, I agree. I agree.
I think there's individual components to it too, but I think as a whole, I think that that's very true.
Yeah.
Because I've definitely kind of seen individually, right? There's both good and bad.
Exactly.
But I think as a whole, I think statements could be true.
In general, I agree. So Shivani, given that you pursued the field of becoming an anesthesiologist. So I just wanted to know, it sounds like you're like I won't even say just an African parent, dream.
She's the African dream parent.
Dream child, right? As lawyer, doctor, engineer, businessman, The dreams, the standards, she hit all the check marks on
you
that.
Made it in life.
So, I just wanted to know, was there anything else you wanted to be? Did you, growing up, did you feel like, your parents wanted you to be a doctor, so this is how to be, okay, enlighten me on that. Did you want it to be like a hooper or something?
I actually used to play basketball when I was a kid.
Nah, she did it.
I did.
She probably.
But then, everybody got their growth spurt.
Oh, dang.
And your girl
She missed out on that one. She would have. You could have been a point guard, though.
Could have.
But basketball was it you always knew. When did you know this is what I want to pursue? I want to be a doctor.
Yeah.
And did your parents have any, like, was it like based on, okay, this is 50% me, 50% my parents,
mm-hmm.
Can you just tell us, that
was path? It ultimately your decision?
So yes, it was ultimately my decision. Mm-hmm. So my dad is actually a family physician.
Mm-hmm.
He was a practicing doctor in India. And when he immigrated here, he actually had to start over. So when you come here, you have to take all your tests again. You have to sort of do a bunch of lab work and research and try to build a resume. And then on top of that, he studied in English, but it's still different when you come here to speak it like an American.
And then the metric system versus...
Yeah.
Yeah, I got you.
I don't know how much of a role the metric system played, but I also think that we need to get with it in this country with the metric system. Everyone else is
Americans
on it.
Just don't care.
They don't care.
I don't get this imperial system nonsense.
Feet per second.
So yeah, when they came here... he actually struggled a lot. We grew up, we didn't have a lot of money. My parents were working very manual labor jobs just to make enough money for our family. It's part of the reason why I went to India to live with my grandparents. Mm. My parents were trying to figure out their stuff and, could have basically used my grandparents' help over there. And it took him about 6 years to kind of take all his exams. He struggled through that and then actually get residency here.
Okay.
So with that being said, he is like the happiest family physician I've ever met in my life. This guy, I remember growing up, we would actually have people we knew or like his patients basically come to the house and he would treat them at the house.
Wow.
And so when you grow up sort of around that passion and you hear just positive stories all the time at the dinner table, you start to really grow an appreciation for this sort of selflessness that I thought my dad exhibited when I was growing up. And so when I got to college, I swore I wouldn't do it. I was like, I'm not going to just be a doctor because my dad is doing this and because whatever, it's the Indian parents' dream too. So I actually took some business classes. Mm. I took some managing classes. But a lot of that stuff was very selfish. Or not selfish, but to me it felt like I didn't quite find that fulfillment that I had seen my dad exhibit when I was a kid. And so I think, you know, coming from a family where the STEM fields are so emphasized anyways, you know, yeah. math and science is what we do.
Right.
I think I kind of naturally fell into the role. I volunteered at the hospitals a lot. I got really involved with the free clinics, found some really great mentors, and then it kind of just went from there. But one thing that was really interesting when I sort of matched out here for residency was my dad's reaction to it. Because I think just like the difference between him and his struggle getting extra like, training.
Yeah, exactly.
Versus me like coming out of med school and then like hopping into my training program. Yeah. It was very interesting to see how much our parents have kind of, my parents have struggled for me to sort of live a dream. And so that I think has been really interesting. I've never, you know, I hear the stories that my parents have gone through, but I personally have always been, you know, taught,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, to just like follow my dreams and do whatever I want to do, did which is so easy? Different. Did what come easy?
What
was your undergrad?
I went to University of Florida.
No, for your degree.
Oh, I did behavioral and cognitive neuroscience.
Hey, jeez.
Which sounds really intense, but it is not.
I was going to ask you, easy.
Guys, but you should have seen Ivan's face. Ivan just blinked like 15 times in 2 seconds.
I think we all know that it's not easy. But growing up, did science come like easy to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think I actually liked history and English. I like edit papers even now.
Did you like math growing up?
I loved math. Y'all should have seen my SAT math score.
Whoa, yo, man, this guy Ivan, man, what you doing, bro? He out here dropping the mic.
The whole setup.
Whole setup. Anyway, don't mind Ivan. We'll just negate him while he's.
I'm coming back.
But yeah, so. No, but to make your point, your first point you make, right? And this was one of the, I think it was our second episode, Ivan, where we try and talk about like our parents, you know, like how they set these expectations on us. But for the most part, we never truly sit down and appreciate how far they came, the Absolutely. Sacrifices they made for us, the struggles that they went to, so that we don't go through that, right? Mm-hmm. We tend to not, you know, we tend to either not acknowledge it enough or don't even ask them, you mm-hmm. know, to know how it is. So, definitely. Thank you for sharing that. And that's definitely right in line with, you know, our theme of what we want to always do. That's why we always try to like talk about our parents, our decisions they made, how they grew up. It's just to see that, you know, to bring light to, you know, their journeys, what they went through,
mm-hmm.
you know, because, yeah, the struggles that they've gone and the sacrifices they made.
I'm back.
And we out here complaining, you know. It's, you know, it gives perspective.
I mean, for context, like my mom was working 2 jobs when she was pregnant with me.
Wow. Imagine.
I can't imagine that.
Shit.
And some of us are calling out with headache from work.
Yeah.
For real? Like, yeah. I mean, Evan, we can never say anything. We can't complain out here, fam. You know?
Man, that's like 2 jobs.
So she can't even complain, fam. Next time I hear her try to complain, I'm like, please, 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 please. This is not enough, you know?
But I mean, it's a testament to like for the real, immigrant though. Story.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. This is real, you know, like just to say like the immigrant story, you know, of, you know, this, you know, I don't like the word, I don't like it, American dream, right?
Mm.
I feel like it's very phony, that saying.
It is, American I think it's dream. A very phony concept.
These are real stories. These are the real stories where she talked about, like, her parents coming from India. These are the real stories, you know? And that's why I try to, let's say, for example, explain to cousins that are back home who think that we're just living it up here, like, you just come to America and everything's good.
Oh my God.
You know, you just have money, you know? I'm like, you guys don't know, you know? The immigrant story in America here, Absolutely. You know, there is no money trees that you just land and say, hey, you're in America, you're in abroad, you're rich, you know?
You can live a good life back home.
Shit, stress-free.
Better.
It's stress-free.
We get naps every afternoon in India.
people were chilling. Like, I remember when I was in India, I would see two guys holding themselves by the pinky finger, walking down the street, chilling, swinging their arms. I'm like, dang, they just have no problems, no stress, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe they might be the ones chilling, you know, but maybe people be just thinking that, you know, you're in America or you're outside, you know, automatically you're rich or everything's better.
No, I mean, it's definitely
misconception.
A testament to what our parents have had to go
exactly.
through, you know, and how lucky we were to not even really, really realize like the magnitude of mm-hmm. what was happening at the time.
Mm-hmm. Because we were just kids.
Because we were kids, right? Mm-hmm. And they were making ends meet for us.
Mm-hmm.
And so majority of the time, you're just happy that you're not even really, you know, for like I can say I'm forever in debt to my parents because...
This guy can't get a mic going on.
Yo, this mic is tripping. But
nah, fam. That's all you, bro. Hold the thing, innit?
I'm forever grateful to my parents because they, no matter what they were going through, we always had a smile on our face.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, like, what all it's about right now is, like, getting into a place where I can be the one to be like, yo, hold this,
absolutely.
You know, take that. And that's just like a little token of like appreciation mm-hmm. for what you've done for us. Mm-hmm. Right. Man, I don't know. It's just the immigrant like story in this country mm-hmm. is, I think is also, people need to speak on it more. You know, I wish like my dad or my mom would write a book about their experiences in this country and what they've had to deal with, you know? But yeah, man. Thanks for sharing that. And I think it's really great that you chose a field in which your purpose is to serve people, you mm-hmm. know? Because I feel like too many times people go after the wrong professions or go after professions for the wrong reasons. You know? But like seeing your experience with it and seeing how it, you know, shape the way you view the world and view the profession as a whole, that's like really a thing of beauty. And mm-hmm. yeah, that's, I mean, I can't say enough about that.
You know? Big facts. That's why she's Dr. P, isn't it?
Dr. P.
Nah, for reals. While Ivan is struggling to get his mic going, I think, you know, he's the prime suspect of technical difficulties today.
This mic, man, it doesn't love me.
But anyway, I have questions, some quick questions. Which one's better? So Shivani was very disappointed that I said Bad and Bougie was, I like Bad and Bougie a little bit better before Lil Uzi's part.
I was disappointed.
Over March Madness.
Extreme disappointment.
So, you know, I don't want to bring it up again. So again, I asked Shivani, which one do you prefer, March Madness or Bad and Bougie?
March Madness.
Can I just hear your explanation for why?
Bad and Bougie is the same lyrics over and over and over and over again.
Bad and Bougie.
Which song went number one out of the two?
But the number one
song. That
will
never matter.
Yeah, but yeah, that doesn't matter because the number one songs are the songs that are the same three words over and over again.
Yeah.
At least in this day and age.
Like, it's only right that song went number one.
Yeah.
Because, like, it can appeal
to
a much wider
audience. You don't have to think to hear it. I like the song. No. What I will say, on that album, had you picked any other song, I would have been like, you know, that's a solid contender.
No, we were just doing comparison for Bad and Bougie Madness, you know.
Like, T-Shirt could have been a better
that's
song.
That's what I'm saying.
My favorite song out of that album is not Bad and Bougie.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
But you picked the best, like one of the best Future songs ever to put against a song.
How do you feel about Future, Shivani? Great guy, huh?
You know?
Oh, God. Don't get me started on Future.
No comment. Hey, man, March Madness is
the music.
So the music, but
I listen to music heavy.
How do you guys feel about that? You only support the Future music, but not the whole guy himself.
I mean, how do you feel about Kanye West?
Oh, Kanye West. Look, they're good. They're parts you accept, they're parts you don't accept, I guess, at the end of the day.
I'm not going to lie. Like, 2 days ago, yesterday I was at my sister's house. We were listening to The World's Greatest, R. Kelly. You remember that song?
Who?
I'm the world's greatest.
Oh, R. Kelly? Yeah.
That's a special song, man.
Man like Robert. So, would you guys still listen to R. Kelly's music or no?
I mean, I was a day ago, but...
No, you know, given that you've already given yourself out, I guess.
No, I mean, I don't... Like, yeah, I already got it. Of course, he's canceled, you know.
Okay, R. Kelly's a
bozo. I want to just go on that point of cancel, like when we cancel people.
You're just taking away their platform.
Do we take everything from them or do we still, like, I guess, say Kanye... If we say Kanye is canceled, do we still rock some Yeezys or nah? F everything that's incorporated.
Is Kanye really canceled?
I feel.
Is he really canceled?
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
I feel very guilty now, though.
About what?
Like if I, cause okay, like I think the other night, I think Graduation came on or something like that.
Hmm.
But like listening to it, I'm like, and then I like am bopping my head, and then I catch myself.
It's too
I'm
much
like,
nostalgia associated.
Oh wait.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you felt that with, like, listening to that song yesterday.
It's just that song, like when it came yourself? Out, it just hit me different as a kid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so, like, me and my sister were listening to it, we were like, damn, this was a great song. Like, yeah, okay, cool, but, you know, R. Kelly, you know? And so then, like, that was it. We didn't listen to anything.
We're tying the memories we had with these artists before we found out or seen how they're acting now. So,
yeah.
Maybe, is there some sort of medical term for this? Are we going through some sort of withdrawal?
Stockholm syndrome?
Yeah.
I don't know.
But listen,
Kanye's been disappointing.
I think Kanye, like, has dropped the ball, like, numerous times on, especially that tweet about, like, abortions, you know? I don't know if you guys saw it, but, like,
I saw it.
He's been saying some out-of-line shit, and he's just out of pocket, but, like, that early Kanye, bro, that was something special. Like,
that's how I look at him.
With him recently, though, I mean, and I feel like I have to say this, mm-hmm. You know, being bipolar and having bipolar disorder is a very, very real thing.
Yeah.
Before I went into medical school, I used to think it was split personality where you mm-hmm. kind of have like this personality and then you kind of split and then you have another personality. And I thought that's what bipolar was. But it's actually this flip flop between these manic episodes where you are very impulsive. You know, you talk really fast and you have these kind of disruptive episodes. And then right after that, you're like at this high, you're not sleeping, you're... Mm-hmm. You're very, like, just on all the time, and then you just crash. And you have this, like, very intense, depressive episode. And there's different forms of it. There's more milder forms of it, too. But, you know, with Kanye, like, I think it's very important to remember that when he just recently was having his episode, like, it wasn't a controllable issue.
Mm.
I think what the challenge becomes is, all of it was online. He was live tweeting his manic episode,
yeah.
right? And
yeah.
so there's opportunity for him once he has taken his medications and sort of gotten out of that manic episode to go back and say, these are the things I had said. And
okay.
you know what I mean?
Yeah, but
you know, you still have, and I don't know if his episode has resolved and I don't know his medical history at all, but if he has recovered, there's room and place to say what I said was out of line. I'm not actually running for president.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the disconnect is.
Or you're saying that he, at least the people around him should, you know, make him or allow him the opportunity to correct whatever statement he made.
So
is he in the sunken place?
Just might be.
I don't know. But like even with his family, right? Everyone was blaming Kim, and I don't really keep up with the Kardashians or anything. But like with that whole situation, everyone was like, why can't Kim get her husband?
Yeah.
But the man is going through a manic episode. Like, how can you blame? Again, women get blamed for things, and it's like, how can you blame his wife? For not controlling him. Like, I felt like the blame was on her when in reality he was just having an actual, medical episode.
But, you know, most people will understand that.
A lot of people don't understand that.
Don't, exactly.
Because what they see is what they get.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
And that's why I think there's room for improvement to say, Because, you know, then you're going to have the Harambe 2016 situation.
Yeah, 60,000 votes. 60,000 people voted for Harambe in 2016.
And so that, I feel like that's going to happen this year. And it's just really unfortunate.
I think a few states, when I heard one state had confirmed that they will not be adding Kanye to their ballot. It was a swing state too, I think it was. But anyway, so yeah, hopefully. But Kanye has been tripping, bro.
Yeah.
He has, but I mean, like, again, like, I like to think back to, like...
Go back to graduation days.
Yeah, Dear Mama is a special song to me, you know. Family Business. Kanye. Family Business is one of my favorite songs.
We still like the old Kanye.
You know what I mean?
The old Kanye.
And it's just like, damn, bro, like, why are you bugging right now? Like, we were rooting for you.
It's a shame.
We were all rooting for you, and, like, now here you are. But...
You know who's Shivani's new favorite artist?
Who?
Nav.
Really?
No.
I was going to say. What do you think about Nav?
It took me a while to come around a little bit. I feel like I kind of have to support him because, you know, he's the first brown boy to get it popping.
He
would say.
That's what he said.
That's what he said in a song.
Yep.
So I feel like there's a part of me that's like, you know, like I think a lot of first gen Indian kids like myself, like we grew up listening to a lot of rap and hip hop mm-hmm. and kind of really like not, I don't want to say we felt that music more, but it was like, I think with just how dynamics of it is yeah, like we just really, yeah, a lot of us like grew up listening to rap and hip hop. And so, you know, it's not surprising to me that now we have Indian people yeah. or of Indian heritage like entering the rap game. I think he can use a lot less auto-tune.
I like his auto-tune. I don't think it's too much.
I like him on your stuff.
I think that's
when I first like, I like, let me try.
I like some of his like solo stuff.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah.
I think he really got put on when he started doing songs with bigger artists like yeah. Travis. Mm. And
but you know,
them.
He started as a producer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's also from a part of Toronto that's not, you know, like the greatest, if you
really. Mm.
Yeah.
No, but him, I know, like, cause you know, like Canada is known for, you know, like you have Russell Peters, you know, he gives his own experience of being, you know, Canadian and from Indian heritage. Here's the thing, you know, like with Nav looking at it, that's why I low key like it. Like, I'll be like, yo, I mess with Nav, you know, cause I like when people, like, of course, I'm sure there are many sort of Nas. I like when people, like, go out of the what we normally deem them as,
yeah.
you know, like
the box.
We don't see an Indian, you know, rapper with the chains, wavy as hell singing, you know, like we don't see it, you know.
Yeah,
you know, we're used to seeing, you know, you see Shivani was about to flex her SAT score on us. Yeah. You know,
not so it's cool.
Always relaxing. Nerd back then, nerd forever.
You're
refreshing, what can
you
I
know?
Say?
Yeah. Oh, that's right. You know, so
tap with Meek Mill. You heard that?
Exactly. Tap,
bro.
Tap.
Song yeah, goes exactly. crazy. You
yeah.
know,
like, so shout out to Nav, man. Hey, man, don't go to that SAT, bro. Don't live up to your standards.
Nah, he's cool, man. Like I also yeah. like his like. It's almost like a psychedelic approach to music, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that's how if he
that's
was
actually a
drug,
really good way of putting it.
Yes.
Yeah, if he was a drug, approach. He would be a psychedelic.
Fam.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
And you know us, like our African aunties, moms love Indian movies and their songs. My mom sister, all she watches, she knows, she even learned like in Hindi words from just watching so many Indian movies. Indian movies are popular. I don't know if it's for Uganda, but in Gambia and growing up, like my aunt, she loved Indian movies. We also used to watch it. Amitabh Bachchan, all these guys, you know, she used to know the words, you know, or Kia Hua. She used to know all these things, you know. So, yeah, like, so I guess, you know, now you see how generation shifts. Now we're having naps, you know.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Fun fact, I actually know the Indian national anthem.
Please, wow. Ivan, bless us.
Bless us.
Bless us.
We're not going to sing it.
Ivan, bless us. Ah, you don't know it then. Sorry.
I do.
Then sing it.
You see how he's trying to like play me into it?
Guys, if he does not sing this, he doesn't know it. He's
but listen, let me tell you why
Dr.
I know
Dr. B using he's reverse psychology.
Come on, fam.
Let me tell you why I know
You know me, you know, Hindi nahi hai, Hindi nahi bola. You know, I know a few words, but
yo,
you
get
see
this
it.
Guy out of here. But
Tika.
No, in Uganda, the richest man is actually he's Ugandan, but he's of Indian heritage, mm-hmm. right? Because he was born in Uganda, like grew up there, but he's Indian, and so he owned the school that we went to, and
he made you guys learn
there. Yeah, because like majority of like Indian kids, yeah. they went to that yeah. school. You know, it was like two or three schools that they would go to. Mm. So we had to know the Ugandan national anthem and the Indian national anthem.
Give us the first part now, just the first part.
I want to hear it.
Yeah, come on. Jana Gana Mana Adina
Yaka Jaya. Hey, that's all you get. That's all you get. That's all you get. That's all you get.
You know?
Man, okay. Fun fact. I
that's like, awesome, Ivan. I like that.
Yeah. I know a lot of words in Hindi, but some are not next. You know, from my time living in Delhi, you know. I know a couple of words, you know. Yo, Ivan.
What are you saying?
Kese ho?
I'm not going to respond because you don't even know what he's saying to me, bro. What's he saying to me?
When I was in college, like, I would just drop these phrases at, like, my friends who were from India. They were shocked, fam. They yeah. used to get their mind blown, bro. Like, who the hell is this guy? You know, how do you know this works? Nah, for real. Nah,
bro. I didn't
if ever you should, learn like, Hindi, you know, like, I said people were saying how India was a favorite place. Like, I mean, you know, that's another one post-COVID trip. You get post-COVID trip. Gotta go to India, fam. I go to, you know, Jaipur, where Shivani, you know, was chilling at.
With the
you
castles? Know,
yeah, yeah. You got to go to Goa.
Okay.
You know, it's like by the coast, beach city. You know, yeah, India. Incredible. Bombay India. Cool? You got to go to Agra. Of
Bombay course, Taj Mahal. City. Just very city. City.
Yeah. Where?
Bombay.
Oh, Mumbai. Yeah. Yeah. I haven't been there in Mumbai, but yeah. But India, I haven't gone since 2012, so yeah, I think I might have to. Ivan, let's go now.
We on our Asia trip?
Is come that where we're stopping? Come on.
Come on, G.
We'll have Dr. P, you know. Dr. P, you coming?
Yeah, I'm coming.
Shit, that means...
Who's going to show you around?
I got an uncle who studied medicine in Pakistan, which is completely different, but he knows Urdu.
Urdu?
Cool. Yeah,
he speaks it. Now he lives up. In New York.
That's what's up.
That's really
but yeah, cool. I've been Pioneer.
Pioneer today. Today, our Pioneer is actually still living.
He's still living, guys.
96 years old, and all the way from the southern part of Africa, Kenneth Kaunda.
KK.
As like known he as likes KK. To call him KK. Mm-hmm. So he was the president of Zambia for, how long was that?
For a minute, from 1964 to 1991.
There you go. He was in office and... Although he was kind of there for a long time, it is what it is. But he...
That's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah. The reason I like Kenneth Kaunda is because I recently watched the documentary. Shout out to my cousin Melvin who sent it to me. And he was one of the few African leaders that was advocating for arts and just the arts, you know, whether that's music or, you know, visual arts.
Expression through art.
Expressionism, yeah. There was this... short-lived scene of rock music that was Zambian, and he was actually one of the he actually mandated all Zambian radio stations to play Zamrock was what they called it. It was short-lived because of a few different reasons, but yeah, he's still living today, and you know, he kind God of bless. Serves as a I'd say advisor, if you will, to the Zambian president.
And if you go back again to our good Faces of Africa and you search on YouTube Faces of Africa, Kenneth Kaunda, Kaunda, they have a really good, nice documentary on him. And they really show his personality. He's very bubbly, really friendly.
Yeah.
He has these signature suits they make for him with his initial. And typical African guy, he goes on bragging how these suits have, you know, how yeah. these suits are special made for him. It has his initials there. So, you know, he's a real, you know, like just seeing his personality, you know, and how he's still, you know, full of life.
Definitely.
It's really great to see. So he's definitely a pioneer.
Yeah. I mean, it's cool to just see people in positions like that continue to advocate for things like the arts, you know.
Yeah.
Because if you know me, I'm a firm believer in the arts mm-hmm. and I'm a very big advocate for self-discovery outside of whatever your deemed profession is, you know. Mm-hmm. So
big facts.
KK Kenneth Kaunda.
KK and that, yeah, pioneer of the day
from Zambia.
Pioneer of the day, yeah.
Actually, should we say doctor? Because he's a PhD. But it's okay.
Does he have a PhD? I'm sure as an African dad, he would say we should call him doctor.
Doctor or honorary.
Yeah.
But yeah.
He is a doctor. He's a PhD.
I don't know, actually.
Look,
but he was a teacher by profession. Gambia,
he was in a doctor. They called him doctor.
No. I'm not lying. I have an uncle who, okay, he studied something close to, like, you know, the medical field. But he's not really a doctor, but everybody calls him doctor.
Yeah, so, because we do tend to throw the doctor title a little bit too loosely.
And this guy will come, study you. What problem do you have? Oh, you just need chloroquine. I'm like,
but
wait a minute.
But there was this, I'll never forget this. There was this one time when I was in London with my brother, right? I don't know what. Yeah, some guy came anyway, some Gambian guy, right? He was an engineer, apparently, a civil engineer.
Mm-hmm.
Typical African fashion, right? He was like, yes, you've been to the Canary Wharf? You know, you've been to Canary Wharf? He's like, you've been to Canary Wharf? Like, you know, all the, you know, like the tunnels and everything. You know, the project, that's where I worked on. So we're like, oh, cool. Okay, thank you. He's like, yeah. So everything, I did it. It was all me. I did everything. It was me. I was the engineer. I did everything. I was just like, God damn it. He really did, fam. Here we go again. This is probably the story he tells everybody. This is how family was supposed to probably build one block in there.
You know.
He knows his worth.
Exactly. I can't even fault him for that.
He's saying he did everything, give himself credit for everything. But anyway, I laughed. I really laughed. I was like, yep.
Yeah, man.
Sounds like typical there.
So, Pioneer of the Day is done.
Yeah.
Shiv, do you have any like parting thoughts you want to give to all of our peoples,
tribes people?
None?
Nothing? Any last questions?
She's giving us the Marshawn Lynch treatment.
Wow.
I'm just here so I don't get fined.
Yeah. She's like, I gave you enough.
No, I don't have any parting questions. Thank you for having me. This has been really fun, per usual. Gotta hang out
of course.
With the boys, you know?
The boys.
Thank you for allowing me to share my experiences and really asking. I think one thing I'd like to say is, like, asking questions is really important. So it's nice to kind of share this and really learn from each other. And so, you know, me asking you guys questions and you guys asking me questions, I think it's just a really good way for us to kind of share our different cultures, because we do come from such different backgrounds.
Right.
But, you know, you guys are my people here, and like it's really been amazing to be welcomed so quickly. I kind of was nervous about moving out here. I'm from Florida, so it's really far, literally across the country.
That's Florida. No comments.
That state has to be defunded.
Defund Florida.
But, you know, I feel like I was just welcomed so warmly here, by you guys and everyone else. And it really has just been a joy. And I really, really appreciate sitting down and getting to know a little bit more about you guys, and you guys getting to learn a little bit more about me.
Yeah.
Thank you for
popping by.
Appreciate it.
And taking time out of your day to hang with the boys.
With the boys, yes, sir.
You know what I mean?
General.
Always saying.
Yeah, man. This is it. We're finishing up the season strong.
Yeah.
And you know, we'll have two more left before we go back incognito.
To recess,
yes,
we like to call it, you know. But thank you guys for tuning in again.
Appreciate the support, you know. I think we have to always, you know, thank our tribes people
is always tapped in, always, man, from across the globe too.
And if you guys hadn't had the chance, we did a collaboration with the Two Chai guys, Maha Club.
Yep. You said Maha Club. Now, wow. Two Chai High and the Maha.
I always say that. I always say Maha Club. I don't know why. Delta, is it my Delta Sky? Anyway.
Yeah. Two Chai guys.
Yes.
Or no, Two Chai and the Mile High guys.
Yeah. No, you don't get you. This guy. Come on, Ivan.
No, it's Two Chai guys. No, Two Chai and the Mile High guys.
Two Chai guys and Mile High. But I know the initials because it's 2CGMH.
That's how I say it. I just say the
I just usually say two Chai Guys. Chai Guys. But, you know, but the full name. Anyway, these are Phil, Phil and Al are great. You know, we got a chance. They invited us to get on their platform, this podcast. And we had a conversation, you know, about, you know, them being African-American men, us being African. You know, differences, similarities, how we could improve our relationship. So we, if you guys haven't, you know, go check them out. Like, again, if you go to Spotify or any, you know, platforms, just, you know, just search the initials 2CGMH, and you'll see us there. And we plan on having them on our podcast.
Pretty soon.
Yeah, so. But, you know, just shout out to them for having us on their platform. Really enjoyed that episode recording with them. And we look forward to collaborating with them. Yes.
But, yeah, again, thank you, Dr. Shiv.
Yes. Dr. P.
Thank you, all our tribes people. But unfortunately, we need to sign out because we have things to go do.
Inshallah.
So until next time, peace.